Jackson, W266DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. Breaking news, Henry Kissinger, the nation's 56th Secretary of State, has died at his home in Connecticut. He was 100. CBS's Steve Kathan looks back.
As America's top diplomat, Kissinger opened up relations between the U.S. and China, developed the policy of détente with the Soviet Union, and his efforts to arrange a ceasefire between North and South Vietnam.
We believe that peace is at hand.
Brought him a Nobel Peace Prize in 1973. But this diplomat who never lost the German accent of his birthplace was a man who also had many critics. Kissinger was accused of lies, manipulation, and secret deals, blamed for, among other things, dragging out the Vietnam War, the secret bombing of Cambodia, the propping up of South American dictators, and generally ignoring human rights. Steve Kathan, CBS News.
Israel releases 30 Palestinian prisoners on the sixth day of a Gaza truce after Hamas frees 16 hostages. President Biden says one of them is Liat Benin, who holds dual U.S. and Israeli citizenship.
I talked with her mother and father. They're very appreciative, and things are moving well. She'll soon be home with her three children.
The handover of hostages was overshadowed by an unconfirmed claim by Hamas that a family of Israeli hostages, including a baby, had been killed during earlier Israeli bombardment. CBS's Holly Williams has the latest from Tel Aviv.
We have just spoken with Ghazi Hamad, who is a senior figure in Hamas. We asked him about that claim made by Hamas. He said that Hamas is willing to hand over evidence to the ICRC and the mediators in the negotiations between Israel and Hamas, that those three hostages, Ariel Bibas, Kafir Bibas, and their mother Shiri, were killed by an Israeli airstrike.
The annual Christmas tree lighting ceremony has taken place at Rockefeller Center in New York City, and there were some protesters who showed up. CBS's Matt Piper in New York.
Among the thousands at the annual Rockefeller Center tree lighting,
Israel is a fascist state!
Protesters, hundreds of them in support of Palestinians. One person seen holding a swastika sign at the protest.
Free Palestine.
The NYPD says there have been more than 700 protests in the city since the war began. There were arrests last week when protesters tried to disrupt the Thanksgiving Day parade. Matt Piper, CBS News, New York.
A ransomware attack on the Ardent Hospital chain with locations in six states causes chaos. Some emergency room patients had to be diverted to other hospitals. This is CBS News.
You don't need a job platform, you need a hiring partner. Indeed lets you schedule and conduct virtual interviews all from one place. Start at Indeed.com/credit.
Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Three former Wisconsin Supreme Court justices advising Assembly Speaker Robin Voss did not violate the state's open meeting laws. That's the ruling from Dane County Judge Frank Remington, who also says American Oversight can keep seeking records from the panel that recommended against impeaching Justice Janet Protasiewicz. New research links emissions from coal-fired power plants to about 500,000 premature deaths in the United States over the past two decades. Karen Gallagher is with Clean Wisconsin.
A lot of wind and solar is being added to the electricity grid every day, which is really exciting to see in Wisconsin, across the Midwest, and it just needs to ramp up faster.
Gallagher's group is working for stricter emission standards in Wisconsin. I'm Nate Wiggehout, Civic Media News.
The Bucks win in Miami. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks and the Heat went at it back and forth in the final minute. Milwaukee pulled away with the win, 131-124. Chris Middleton got hot down the stretch and talked about the team headed to the NBA's in-season tournament in Las Vegas.
It was good. Completed the task of, you know, getting to Vegas. Now we got to do a little bit more. You know, we're hungry for it. We won it. It's exciting times for us to go to Vegas for the first, you know, in-season tournament. So we're happy about that.
College football, after 3 years, Braylon Dylan Allen has played his last regular season game for the Badgers. Allen announcing he's decided to become eligible for the NFL draft. He's from Fond du Lac and converted from linebacker to running back, and was asked about his 2-touchdown performance last weekend against Minnesota.
It was good. I'm just happy that we won the game and the team played well. Definitely could have done more, do my job well.
That's Wisconsin running back Braylon Allen. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Partly cloudy skies tonight with a low of 27. Southwest winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Tomorrow, high of 42. Tomorrow night, lows around 25. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 30 degrees.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Keeping Southeast Wisconsin informed, engaged, and entertained. This is The Shaw. 540 AM and 101.1 FM. WAUK.
And we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I find it interesting that during Donald Trump's late night rants and early morning rants over on the truth thing, which I still find hysterical, that a pack of lies is being framed as truth. But Donald Trump went on this rant about how he's going to go after Comcast and how, you know, they've opened Pandora's box. But the other gem was, he's accepted the support of a Black Lives Matter leader. And I find it interesting, considering all of the assaults and all of the verbal attacks that he's made over the years. But he's making a play, saying that he has done more for Black people than any president since Lincoln. Yeah. I'm here to share some thoughts on where we are as a country and where we need to heal, especially from a guy who says we're all vermin. I've asked Michael Zug to come talk with us. Michael is the author of Class, Race, and Gender, Challenging the Injuries and Divisions of Capitalism. We'll get links out on social media how you can pick this up. Michael, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thanks for having me.
So we've been playing this sad, destructive game for a long time of divide and conquer. And I've said many times on this program that the wealth class has masterfully figured out how to pit us against each other, white, black, male, female, gay, straight, you figure it out. They've done it very well. And we keep falling for it. How do we begin to heal those divides, heal those fissures? How do we begin to come back together and move in a more positive direction?
Well, I think there are two pieces to that. One is to deepen our understanding of where these divisions have come from. And the second is to get involved in actual social movements that challenge those divisions and challenge those injuries. And in the course of that struggle, we learn who are our friends and who are our enemies. And we find that we have more in common across the divisions that have been given to us. We have more in common across those divisions than we really have in common with the corporate elite and with the capitalist class in this country that created those divisions.
Now, the division that you're talking about should be is a class war. That is what you're saying.
What I think is the actual division that is driving the injuries and the problems and the injuries, injustices that we're all struggling against. We have all these movements. A Black Lives Matter movement, the Women's Liberation Movement, Me Too, Gay Liberation, and the environmental stuff, all these things, movement against privatization, the labor movement, all the upsurges and the strikes that we're seeing now, all those things are directed at the corporate elite and the capitalist domination of the country and of the society.
So when I want to reunite the country, and I believe how we reunite this country is to reunionize it, would you agree with that?
Well, the unionization would be a very, very important part of uniting the country, absolutely, because when workers get together and have unions, they have strength, they have power, they have capacity to challenge the employers, not only at work, but in the society in general over social policy. And the same people who are trying to take votes away from black people are the same people who want to have right-to-work laws and take the right of workers to organize unions away. So these things go, sort of go hand in hand in the arsenal of the corporate elite and the ruling class in this country, and the resistance to it ought to go hand in hand in white labor, black labor, all everybody together, not only at work and not only in the struggle with the employer, but to deal with the all the divisions and all the injustices that the corporate elite puts down on all of us.
You know, I say all the time, and I'm glad you talk about the Powell memo and that blueprint that, you know, I got to tell you, the right has masterfully used over the years. You look at the massive echo chamber that they've built with their media structure, that they can focus group test and think tank approve a particular issue, and just continue through time and repetition to change hearts and minds, where the left really never competed in those spaces.
Well, we do compete in those spaces, but we don't compete with very many resources and with much experience, actually. I mean, your program is part of what we do to challenge that. It's not like we should ignore the things that you're doing and that Democracy Now! Does and that other broadcasters and other journalists are trying to do in their own spaces. It's just, we're up against a very formidable foe. And the way in which we get the word out is through struggle, is through the actual, organization of people in the street and in their workplaces and in their communities to battle the injustices that we all face. And we should do that together. And what this book is about,
right,
is trying to trace back into the way the economy and the society is organized at its core as a capitalist society, how that basic structure then gives rise to these challenges all across human experience.
Are we a capitalist country? I mean, the truth of the matter is we socialize, corporate losses, and we have cutthroat capitalism for working people, but are we truly a capitalist country?
We're a capitalist country in the sense that it's the capitalist class that runs it. Let's start with that. And there's a great interest now after Bernie Sanders' campaigns about socialism and democratic socialism, which is a way of trying to say working people should run the show instead of capitalists. And that's the challenge, is how do you develop a political operation that brings working people, by working people, I mean not just white men, which is often the way in which the working class is characterized. The working class is black, it's women, it's men, it's white, it's Asian, it's Native American, it's all kinds of people. And it's one working class, which does have divisions in it. Let's not forget, if we talk about the racial divisions, we had slavery in this country, everybody knows that. But what we had was racial slavery. And, that racial element of slavery was designed to divide working people, white from black. And we're still living with that legacy, and we need to overcome it, both by understanding its origins and how destructive it is for white people, as well as, of course, for black people, and also to combat it not just with understanding, but with social movements that bring together white and black people and white and black labor to confront the power of capital and work and all across the society.
It's interesting you bring that up because, a couple of years ago we did a civil rights tour, labor's involvement in the civil rights movement, and we went to a plantation in North Carolina, and the woman gave us a great tour and said, here, this is the quarters of the slaves, and oh, by the way, on the other side of the fence is where the white people lived, who had it much worse off. They were food insecure, they lived in, tattered, basically, dwellings, but they seemed to think that they were still better than the slaves because they weren't slaves, and they used that division to keep both sides pitted against each other so that the owners, the masters, could exploit both of them. And, the woman, what she was trying to say is not that the slaves had it good, is that the division made them both worse off. And I think that was an important point.
Well, it is. And we see the legacy of that still today, because if you look at where the legacy and the implementation of racist policies are the greatest in the United States, in Mississippi or South Carolina or North Carolina. What you'll see there is not only are black people in the worst condition, but white people are also in the worst condition. That's where white wages are the lowest. That's where union density is the lowest. That's where life expectancy for white people is lowest. Those things go hand in hand. The suppression of black people and the division of the working class through that racial slavery and its legacy also has led to increased power for the same ruling class that wants to press down all workers, whether they're white, black, or Asian, or whoever they are. And that is where we see the legacy of that racial slavery acting to the disadvantage of white people. It's not that white people are getting so much out of it. White people are being pushed down in the living standards and in the conditions of life, in areas especially where racial supremacy, white supremacy is the strongest.
You listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Michael Zweig. He is the author of Class, Race, and Gender, Challenging the Injuries and Divisions of Capitalism. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at this. Highly recommend it. Now, you know, again, I go back to this idea of, you know, class war and working class, because I don't use the term middle class. I say I'm a working class guy. I may live in middle class neighborhoods, but I'm a working class guy. I think there is a distinct difference. And I think we as a country, as working people, I think we need to reclaim that identity. I'm curious your thoughts.
Well, you know, it depends how you ask the question in a survey, how people identify. If you say, are you upper class, middle class, or lower class, almost everybody says middle class. But if you put working class into the mix, are you upper class, middle class, working class, lower class, about 35 or 40% of the population will say that they're working class people. And so that's a start. And the data that I've analyzed from the U.S. Department of Labor by looking at occupation to get a handle on what class people are in, I would say something like 62% of the labor force in the United States are working class people. We normally think of that in terms of sort of lunch bucket folks walking into factory gates, but the working class is not just factory workers, it's not just industrial workers, it's also home healthcare workers, people who are working in call centers, people who are security guards, people who are emergency medical technicians, all these people, and you add it all up and it's 62% of the labor force. Now there is, to me, I think it is also important to understand that class is not a question of income, it's a question of power. So if the working class are people with relatively little power, there's another class of people who have more power, and that's the capitalist class. And the middle class is what's in between the capitalist class and the working class. I think that that middle class, by my calculations, is around 35 or 36% of the population in the United States. And those are small business owners. They're people who are in managerial and supervisory positions in business, and they're professional people, doctors, lawyers, university professors, that kind of thing, accountants. Those are the professional and other segments of the middle class. But by no means is this a middle class society. This is a society where the overwhelming majority of the population is working class. And again, that's not just white people. That's actually white men are the minority in the working class in this country. If you put the women in and people of color, you have a very mixed race, mixed gender class of people who share in common their subordination to the direction and the power of their employers and capital.
So with all of these divisions and all this stuff going on, what is the way forward? As I said, I think the labor movement is where we organize workplaces. You know, I've talked about issues over the years that have popped up in the workplace that because we had a union in place, we were able to solve these issues and get resolution. Do you have hope? Do you see a way forward? Are you encouraged by the thing you're seeing? What do you think?
Well, I think that there are very interesting upsurges in the labor movement today. We see it in the auto workers, the UAW, the strike. We see it in the Teamsters that backed off the UPS. We see it in the SAG-AFTRA and the writers. We see it in the Starbucks workers. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on. But I think that the strength of, and the importance of working class organization goes beyond the workplace and beyond union activity at work in a collective bargaining agreement. Workers also live in communities. Workers also live in the society as a whole. Overall, they go into voting booths. So the working class has, and unions and the labor movement has to pay attention to the whole range of experience of working people. And that means that the labor movement needs to pay attention to voting rights. The labor movement needs to pay attention to what's going on in the schools and what kind of education their kids are getting, and the success of teachers and the needs of teachers to have a decent standard of living. The working class and the has to pay attention in all of its organizational forms to all of the conditions of life that working people experience.
No, I agree
and
with
the
you.
The labor movement is central to that, but it isn't the only thing.
Yeah, but I always say that, like, you, empowered workers make empowered citizens. If you have people who have the wealth to be able to take a day off to participate, that's a better scenario. And that's kind of where I view things.
Well, that's true. And I think that it's part of the reason why it's difficult to mobilize people to get into activity, into volunteer. I mean, even just ordinary volunteering. For over 30 years, a volunteer in a fire department where I live. Well, that volunteer fire department would have a hell of a time getting new young people to volunteer because they're all working 2-3 jobs, because they have other responsibilities, and because the training, takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
So the whole question of working people having the capacity and winning the capacity to secure their own rights and to fight for those rights, that's all part of what we need to do. And again, that's not just at work. That's throughout the experience of working people.
Michael Zweig, I appreciate you taking some time for us. The book, Class, Race, and Gender, Challenging the Injuries and Divisions of Capitalism. Highly suggest it. We'll get links out on social media how you can take a look at this. Michael, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate what you're doing, and I wish you success with what your programming turns into.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it. Let's take a quick break. Back with your thoughts after this. Stick around. You'll listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Again, the book, Race, Class, Race, and Gender, written by Michael Zweig. Challenging the Injuries and Divisions of Capitalism. Well worth the read. Let's quick go to the phones. We got Chad in Chicago on line one. Chad, how you doing today?
Rick, good to talk to you again.
You as well.
You actually made me laugh out loud when you went on the premise that the left doesn't have a message board to get out all that Democrat talk.
Yeah, which one is it?
I mean, come on.
Tell me which one. Well, you gonna give me CNN? You gonna give me MSNBC? Come on.
No. I'll do better than that. How about pretty much every major sporting owner, all the major sports, football, baseball, basketball, now even hockey. Saying MSNBC, CBS.
All the billionaires, the capitalist billionaires who own the sports teams, they're the messengers of the left?
Well,
come on, Chad.
Absolutely.
They're about selling tickets, and they're about selling products.
You're smarter than that. Come on.
Rick,
what is across every end zone and every baseline in basketball? It's all a Democrat talking point now. I mean, we used to be able to go to a sporting event and, you know, keep politics out of it. That's where the American people, the sportsmen, wanted to go. You know, we didn't want to listen to that, or you know, we wanted to go watch a game.
Shouldn't end racism be something we want to do as a country?
Hollywood included.
Is that not a talk?
Hollywood.
Shouldn't that be just a human talking point? You're giving it to the Democrats. I'll flip it to the other side then. I guess you're for racism then.
No, absolutely. Absolutely not.
You seem to have a problem with ending racism being in the end zone.
No.
That's what you said.
I don't want it in my face at the end zone.
Are those
Republican talking points?
I don't care whose talking points. They're human talking points.
And that's fine. That's fine. There's no problem with that. Okay, but again, there's no problem with saying that. But it's the points of, you know, if you want to say that the left doesn't have any platforms, I mean, it used to be Twitter, used to be Facebook, used to be, you know, obviously MSNBC, CNN, and all that. Hollywood, I mean, come on, we got to agree with that, right, Rick?
Yeah, no, Hollywood, they're fairly liberal, yeah.
Okay. Cool. We can.
They were
agree on
absolutely
something.
Not anymore.
No, I'm not gonna.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, they're. But, it is what it is, man. But tell me, real quick, because I got other people I got to get to. Do you think that the left has the same kind of reach that the right has? I'm just throwing that out there. Do you think in the average everyday person's life, do you think that the left has the same access?
I would say absolutely. Okay. And the reason, because the
I appreciate it. I got
both of them are.
I appreciate it, Chad. I got to get Jack online too. Well, real quick. Appreciate it though. Thank you. What is it? Kurt from Akron online too. Kurt, how are you, man? Real quick, what's on your mind, buddy?
Well, maybe I'll give you one. Is tomorrow?
Uh oh. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm there. It's because I was going to do things to say, but I real quickly taking everything. So tomorrow.
Okay, let's move on. Who do we got on three? Alice is on line three. Alice, what's on your mind?
I forgot to tell you what the latest right-wing conspiracy is.
Hit me.
I love it. We're not supposed to worry about climate change because we're going to have a pole shift.
Okay. And the Earth is still flat? Is that what you're telling me?
No. We're going to have a pole shift, and that's why everything's acting wacky. And I just looked at him and said, you do realize that's like the end of everything? But, hey, whatever turns the crank. Have a good evening.
Alice is addicted to porn. I know she's not, but she's turning cranks, man, so I don't know. What a weird segment this has been so far. I gotta tell you, it's just one of those things that made me go, I'm not quite sure how we got where we are, but here we are. But Chad, I appreciate the thoughts. No, look, I stand by the fact that that our news is not as liberal as the right wants us to believe. And look, you know, talk radio is 90% conservative and ultra conservative. You look on the talk radio dial, AM radio is nothing but conservative radio and religion. And that's turned conservative. I come back to who funds this stuff. Is this in the interest of working people? Is this in the interest of making lives better? That's the frustrating point that I have. But I appreciate the thoughts, guys. Is this Jack? I got a minute, Jack. What's on your mind, buddy?
Just real quickly, I still do not understand why the Democratic Party, or particularly President Biden, doesn't start something every week, half an hour. So it would take fireside chat just pointing out the many things that he has done to help this country. And it would also, of course, clearly show there is no problem with his thinking ability.
No, we
really need something like that.
Been saying the same thing.
We absolutely need it.
I am right there with you, Jack. Appreciate it, man. Thanks so much. And like I said from the beginning, with the infrastructure bill, what I think they should have done, giant cardboard cutouts of Joe Biden saying, "I did that." You've got to tell people. You've got to tell them what you want to tell them.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK.
CBS News Special Report. Henry Kissinger, Secretary of State under President Richard Nixon, has died at his home in Connecticut. That according to his consulting firm. Kissinger was 100. CBS's Deborah Rodriguez with more.
His policy of détente eased tensions with the Soviets. His secret travels to China opened doors to that nation. And his shuttle diplomacy in the Middle East helped contain the fallout from the Yom Kippur War.
In no area of the world is it more difficult to promote a just and lasting peace.
In 1970, Kissinger began secret negotiations with the North Vietnamese in hopes of ending the Vietnam War.
We have brought them to this point with considerable difficulty and with considerable anguish.
The deal earned him a Nobel Peace Prize, though peace was not to come until 1975, when Secretary of State Kissinger, now serving in the Gerald Ford administration, watched Saigon fall.
CBS News Special Report, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wiggehout. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The head of the Universities of Wisconsin privately suggested that chancellors eliminate liberal arts programs at low-income campuses. That's according to emails obtained by the Daily Cardinal student newspaper at UW-Madison. On September 1st, Jay Rothman told chancellors it would be part of a long-term path to stabilize the UW system's finances. A UW spokesperson says Rothman values liberal arts education. Quick Trip is recalling some fruit that may be contaminated with salmonella. The Wisconsin company and the Food and Drug Administration say the recall is for 3 pre-cup, fruit cup, and tray products. The products use true fresh cantaloupe, which have the potential for salmonella contamination. The fruit cups and trays were also on the shelves at Quickstar, Stop and Go, and Tobacco Outlet Plus stores. I'm Nate Wiggehout, Civic Media News.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Chris from Middleton. Welcome to the show. What do you got for us?
I'm a Democrat. I totally agree that there's been too much corporate influence probably in the Democratic Party. I liked how Bernie talked about economic issues, and I agree we need more of that. But I don't think we can also afford to shy away from the identity politics. In fact, we got to lean into the identity politics and not be shy about it.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 till 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Here's your updated forecast on The Shaw. Partly cloudy skies tonight with a low of 27. Southwest winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Tomorrow, high of 42. Tomorrow night, lows around 25. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 30 degrees.
An RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
Be a part of the resistance. Check out The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson, Monday nights at 7 on The Shaw. 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK and on the Civic Media app. Your home of the Earl Ingram Show. Weekday mornings from 8 till 10 on The Shaw. 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
Aboard Blue for the first time in years. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help push back against right-wing politicizers of your school district, contact campaignsharedfuture.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as we've been talking about for quite some time, smart investment, sound policy, that's how we rebuild the country. That's how we reshore manufacturing. And as I talked about the other day, when there was a historic agreement out on the West Coast with a chip manufacturer who working with the building trades to ensure that the jobs created building the facility are going to be union jobs and that the jobs in the production facility part of it eventually will be union jobs. So understand, we're going to use public money. We're going to use investment from the CHIPS Act to reshore manufacturing, and that investment is going to bring good quality family sustaining wage jobs right here to workers in this country. And I got to tell you, it's what we should be doing much, much more of. And like I said, it's a good start. And here to share some thoughts on it is Alex Van Skyke. Alex is an organizing and campaign counsel with CWA, the Communications Worker of America. Alex, thanks for taking time for us.
Absolutely. Pleasure to be here, Rick.
So let's talk about this this agreement. This is Acash Systems, business. They're building a facility out, I guess, is it West Oakland?
Yep, they're building in West Oakland. They're committed to providing high quality jobs with a local hire pipeline, and yeah, they're doing things right.
Now, the part that caught my attention, the historic part in this, is not that we're reshoring manufacturing, and that's great. We should have been doing it for years. But this is the first in this industry's labor neutrality agreement. The company's just saying, hey, look, you know, go organize the workforce. Let's work together. Let's all move in the same direction. This is kind of, to steal a Joe Bidenism, this is kind of a big freaking deal.
Absolutely. This is a landmark agreement. As far as we know, this is the... this agreement with Acash Systems is the first of its kind in the semiconductor industry. It sets a standard, and it proves that this kind of labor neutrality agreement can be a win-win for everybody.
Now, walk us through what a labor neutrality agreement is. I've heard it a labor peace agreement. I've heard a bunch of things. But what exactly does that mean?
Well, basically, what it does is it creates a fair process for workers to organize if they so choose. It kind of lays out the organizing rights in advance so that, when this facility is up and running, workers can organize without being afraid of retaliation or interference. Management will be trained not to get involved, and basically the way it should be, the way it happens in a lot of the world, where bosses keep their nose out of organizing because it's up to workers whether they want to form a union. And frankly, they should have no role in the process.
So no captive audience meetings, no firings, audience. no harassment, intimidation, no following you home, no video cameras, sharing everything, none of that stuff. Is it what I understand?
None of that stuff. Yeah, no, they have committed to not do or say anything directly or indirectly to convey that they're opposed to unionization or to prefer any particular union. They're not saying nothing. They're not doing nothing. It's up to the workers.
So, I mean, I had someone email me and go, they didn't do this on their own. There had to be someone pushing them. There's no such thing as a corporation that's going to do this. And we can argue whether that's true or not. But my response was, I believe a lot of this has to do with the fact that we've got Joe Biden in the White House who is pushing this kind of model. We're investing in these chips, we're investing in these manufacturing plants, and we're saying, hey, look, you've got to make sure that these are good jobs. So I'm saying, if Joe Biden's not in the White House, this doesn't happen.
I think that's quite possibly true. I mean, from the perspective of the founder of the company and the CEO, he is pretty public about the fact that he believes in collective bargaining and believes that, he's going to live out his values. So that part's great and some might say somewhat unique and fantastic. The other piece is, you've got Joe Biden saying, we want employers to be neutral about unions. We want to create union jobs. We want workers to be able to choose a union without any interference. The CEO of this company, Acash Systems, actually was just on a panel at the Labor Department yesterday with Acting Secretary Julie Hsu with a VP at Microsoft and a worker from Microsoft and AFL-CIO representative. They're all talking about the business case for labor neutrality in the DOL. I mean, it's a brand new day.
No, and so, look, this I've said, and you're obviously the legal mind here, but I've said for a very long time the National Labor Relations Act was a peace treaty. It was, you know, right. You know, people were in the streets. There was chaos in the streets. There were sit-down strikes. There were, you know, strikes virtually all over the place. As my grandfather told the story, we were literally tearing the country apart bit by bit to fight for better wages, hours, conditions. And I got to tell you, I think we're kind of in a moment where labor militancy is rising. So it's not surprising to me that you're going to get CEOs who go, hey, you know, we just want the work to get done.
Yeah. And it all fits together. The politics at the national level, the upswing of worker organizing and militancy, the tight labor market, unions getting off their butts and organizing. It's a great moment, and they all kind of reinforce each other. It's hopefully the beginning of a positive cycle.
Now, CWA has been doing some really great stuff here. Just a couple of days ago, we had someone on from the organizing campaign at Wells Fargo. We're back to organizing bank workers. And I'll understand, that happened in the past. This isn't new ground. We had bank worker unions in the past. But it's great to see that they're being revived and we're moving in that direction.
Absolutely. No, it's really that's another really exciting campaign. We just filed for two union elections at Wells Fargo, part of a long fight to hold Wells Fargo accountable over the years, as they've done a lot of shady practices against workers and consumers.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, even during all that, I said, look, if you had unionized workers, they wouldn't have put up with it. They wouldn't have stood by. They would have spoken up. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Alex Van Skuyk. Alex is an organizing and campaign counsel with CWA, the Communication Workers of America. You can check out their website, cwa-union.org. We'll get links out on social media, how you can take a look at that. But let's go back to the building of this. Because right now we're just talking about, conceptually where this is going to go, right? I mean, there's nothing in the ground as of right now, but I understand that this is going to be built with all union labor. I got to assume with a project labor agreement.
Yep. That was the company negotiated a project labor agreement with the Alameda County Building Trades parallel to the negotiations with us. Another aspect of I think what's in it for companies and part of the environment right now is the workforce development angle and the encouraging of union apprenticeship and pre-apprenticeship programs, pre-hire programs, high road programs that are working with unions of different stripes. And our industrial division, which I was working with on this agreement with Akash, they really have led the way with applying those sorts of programs in manufacturing. And so I think that's another piece here that is part of the equation.
No, it's an excellent point. And, it's something an argument I made to a manufacturer, locally about 12, 13 years ago. I said he did metal fabrication. And I said, look, you should be partnering up with the Steelworkers Union because they have the skill in this and they're going to find you the skilled people that you need who have experience. And they'll actually help you do a whole bunch of things outside of HR, legislative lobbying, all kinds of stuff. Because look, it doesn't have to be always adversarial because you do share interests, don't you? I mean, the employer and the workers do share something of a common interest, right?
You want them to be
profitable.
Yeah. I mean, we certainly with Akash, we want them to succeed. They're getting up off the ground. They're planning to hire and employ about 500 people eventually, 500 employees in Oakland, the majority of which will be production workers of one sort or another. And, they're a high road employer. We're proud to partner with high road employers that are willing to commit to working with unions, not fighting their workers' efforts to organize. They're doing the right thing, and we hope they have a very successful process of getting the facility up and running.
Ultimately, you want this to be the model that other places go, hey, we can do this. You want this to be something that can be not just in West Oakland, but can be in Central Pennsylvania or in Chicago or in Minneapolis or any of the places that this is like a made in a box kind of thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we hope that there'll be continued pressure, you know, from all angles on these big semiconductor players, because historically this was, you know, going back to the 70s and 80s, CWA and IUE, CWA, before they were part of CWA, were all active in the semiconductor industry when it was first starting out. And it was a viciously anti-union industry. And even today, we just had we had a union election at Momentiv, which produces inputs for the semiconductor industry. And they ran a vicious anti-union campaign. You know, so clearly there's a history and there's some actors who are taking the low road.
Right.
But we're really hoping with this landmark agreement and the support that we're seeing from the Biden administration that, you know, companies will get the signal that, you know, this is the way to go.
I mean, the fact that you just brought up, you know, the vicious campaign, and we see this in so many places. This is one of those things that makes me go, we definitely need major comprehensive labor law reform. There 100%. Has to be major changes, because the pendulum has swung too far to the side of the employer. The power is too great on their side. And look, you know, the NLRA was not an equal playing field kind of thing, but it was trying to make it a little more equal. Today, you know, not so much.
To put my labor lawyer hat on, I would push back and say, actually, the explicit purpose of the National Labor Relations Act was to encourage unions and collective bargaining.
Sure.
And it's so right in the statutory purposes. But what we've had is, you know, as you know, 75 years of judicial, right-wing legislative employer attacks on our labor rights. And they've done everything in their power to make the National Labor Relations Board an ineffectual agency that can't actually do its job according to the statute, which is to encourage collective bargaining. And I am so thrilled that we've got an NLRB that's led by General Counsel Abruzzo, who actually was my former boss at CWA, who's fantastic and really trying to do everything that she can, in my view, to keep laser focused on what the statutory purposes of the National Labor Relations Act were, which is primarily to encourage the practice of collective bargaining. And, you know, we're making some progress. I mean, there's something we call remedial failure. It's like when the remedies associated with a set of legal rights are so feeble that the whole system starts breaking down and people can't actually, you know, exert their rights.
No, that's where I would argue that's where we've been for a very long time.
Yeah,
because
50 years.
You know, the penalty, the penalty in a lot of these cases for illegally firing someone or doing some of the horrible things that we've talked about here on this show is the dreaded, I'll post a notice and swear not to do it again until, I do it again next time.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. The most you get is some back pay, and they're prohibited from levying fines against employers for violating the law. It's ridiculous. And you're 100% right. CWA is 1,000% behind the PRO Act. We need the PRO Act. We got to make it happen, keep it on the agenda. It would be transformative. It would not just allow the NLRB to impose fines, but do a bunch of other stuff, opening up workers and unions' freedom to organize more easily and use their power together without some of these roadblocks that have developed over the last 75 years.
Yeah, as I say, you know, if we want to reunite this country, we've got to reunionize it. That's how we reunite the country. And I think, and I look at the Biden administration, and I've got to give him credit for the things that have been happening, because it's the people that he's put into position to make these decisions. And we're one election away from all those going away and going back to the, not so great days of yesteryear. You know, it just is what it is. But Alex, I appreciate you taking some time. Congratulations on this. This is a big, the steal of Bidenism, a big freaking deal, and I hope we'll see more of it. But thanks so much.
All right.
Alex Van Skuyk, he is the organizing and campaign counsel with CWA. Make sure you check out their union, CWA-union.org. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. Quick break. Right back. Stick around and listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1832. American author Louisa May Alcott was born in Germantown, Pennsylvania. Alcott is most well known for her classic book Little Women and its two sequels. She also wrote a novel called Work, A Story of Experience. Alcott drew on her personal experiences for the novel. She herself had to go to work to support her family at an early age. She worked as a teacher, a seamstress, a governess, and a writer. In her novel, Alcott tells the story of Christy Devon, a young woman trying to support herself in spite of all the odds stacked against her. In the book, Christy makes the difficult decision to leave her family to enter the workforce. She explains to her uncle, "I am willing to work, but I want work that I can put my heart into and feel that it does me good. No matter how hard it is, I only ask for a chance to be a useful, happy woman, and I don't think that is a bad ambition." She starts with several odd jobs, and the book traces Christy's journey as she tries different work opportunities. The book ends with Christy becoming an activist, giving a new voice to working women. The novel explores issues of social justice, women's rights, and their roles beyond the family. This book also uncovers the changing nature of women's work in the new industrial era. Although it's a fictional account, the book captures the experiences of many women of that age. As Alcott wrote, "Christy was one of that large class of women who, moderately endowed with talents, earnest and true-hearted, are driven by necessity, temperament, or principle out into the world to find support, happiness, and homes for themselves." Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in Two. Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Couple of quick emails to get to. Jim sent one that I'm not quite sure what the, it's a nice story. It's a story that I find interesting, but he said, "Rick, in 1968, I sat in on a conversation with my father and his friend who was moving his company to another country. My father said, 'Tom, why are you moving your company? People need these jobs.' His response was, 'Leo, it's so much cheaper.' Rick, this was one of the first of over 2 million companies that have left the United States and have taken millions and millions of jobs." And I agree. Look, you know, the reality is we have moved into the, and this has been a long process, into what's in the best interest of the handful over the best interest of the masses, over we the working people, the owners. And they sold this to us. Understand, Jim, they sold us, and I'm sure you know this, they sold us on the idea, well, you know, we're going to move those jobs, but you're going to get cheap goods. And then you won't have to do that dirty work anymore. And we went, okay. And not thinking that, hey, those are our jobs. That's how we support our families. And it's been, you know, it's been years and years and years of this. And this is sadly where we are. And this is why, again, I come back to why I think, you know, Biden and what he is doing is so important. And I wish they would say more of it. But bringing back that idea that work should be rewarded, that there should be, as I say all the time, domestic consumption for domestic production for domestic consumption. Barbara sent an email, said, "Rick, why don't we hear more of these incredible stories anywhere else? I'm going to miss you when you leave radio. I know you're going to TV, but it won't be the same." I wish you the best. We love you, and we're going to miss you. And I appreciate that, Barbara. I'm going to miss you as well. But like I said, going to do the TV show, and I'm looking forward to that. But, you know, Barbara hits on something. We don't hear a lot of these working class stories. We don't hear a lot of how important this stuff is for communities. We just don't have a media structure that cares. If it bleeds, it leads. There's no blood in this. This is a positive story. This is good stuff. Now, you could say, well, you know, the business channels should cover it. Yeah, if they do cover it, it's going to be a negative. You know, those unions are going to raise the cost of labor, and that's going to be bad for the shareholders. That's what you're going to hear on the business channels. Now, this, again, I go back to when I was a kid, and it's been a while. But when I was a kid, the Cleveland Press, which, you know, was the first job I ever lost because they went out of business, but they had a labor page. They had a labor reporter. A lot of newspapers in this country had labor beats, had people who they reported on what workers were doing, what unions were doing, you know, how conditions were for working people. So, you know, you look at every newspaper in the country, they've always had a business page because we got to tell you how corporations are doing. But some balance. And that's all I've ever asked for, is some balance. I want both sides right there. And what's happened is the moneyed interest in this country, and sadly, and I've talked about this before, the reason we're leaving radio is, one, there aren't any more places for us to grow to, and two, there's no funding in it. And I've been told numerous times by people who are in positions in radio that could easily, you know, add us to 100 stations, but say, look, talk radio is conservative. It's the corporate message. You would make a terrible pitch man. And it's true. I am a terrible pitch man. Because, you know, someone said, well, you find, you know, go get Walmart. They do a lot of ads. And I go, okay, let's talk about that pitch meeting. Hi, Mr. Walmart. I'd like you to advertise on our program. But, you know, what we talk about on the show all the time is organizing your workers to join and form unions to fight for better wages, hours, and conditions that are going to cost you more money, giving workers more rights so you can't abuse them and make them work on their breaks and through their lunches and, you know, off the clock. No, can't do that. And you can't fire them whenever you want willy-nilly for no reason. You got to have a cause. And oh, by the way, we want your corporation to pay more taxes so that the community can have better schools and roads and infrastructure and hospitals and things that you benefit from, but you should help pay for that. And oh, by the way, if that weren't enough, your owners, these six wealthiest people in this country, I want them taxed out of existence. But hey, advertise with us. Do you think that would go well? In fact, I don't think I'd get that whole pitch out before they threw you out. So this is the reason that you see conservative talk radio dominating, because they're all about the sale. It's all about getting you to part with your dollar and, oh, by the way, doing a little brainwashing along the way. That's why I always love the argument, oh, there's liberal media everywhere. I got to tell you, Chad blew my mind with, you know, the NFL and the NHL and all the sporting teams. They're bastions of liberalism. Yeah. That's going to stick with me. I got to tell you, that's going to stick with me. Now, look, you know, he's not wrong. In every stadium that I've been to, there has been across the back of the end zone and racism. I personally think that's a good thing. I didn't know that was a Democratic or liberal talking point. And if it is, I'm sure the liberals and the Democrats would say, yep, that's us. But I would hope Republicans would say that too. I would hope Republicans would go, hey, you know, we should be ending divisions. We should be uniting. But understand, Republicans only win elections when they can divide. The wealth class can only continue to pick our pockets when they keep us divided. The owners of this country can only exploit labor as long as you're divided. That's what they understand. That's what they've known for a very long time. The old Jay Gould quote, I can pay half the working class to murder the other half. It's about the division. We talked earlier about the divisions between black and white workers. You know, Tennessee used to hire convicts They would deliberately arrest former slaves so that they could lease them out to break strikes of white workers. You don't think that was on purpose? We need to stop being divided. And racism is one of those divisions I would hope we all want to end. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, by all means, I want to hear it. If you miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. Thanks for being here. See you back here next time.
You're listening to The Shaw. WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha. And always streaming on the Civic Media app. Kids Radio Show.